When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Greetings and salutations. You've successfully arrived at the Bloody Disgusting Network. The passage of time will now bring you to something strange, unique, and idiosyncratic. Have a good time.
Greetings, constant listeners. It's Michael Mulder Rothman. Fun fact, today, February 8th, marks the 25th anniversary of Stephen King's X-Files episode, Chinga. So to celebrate, we're unlocking our discussion on the episode from October 2021, which has been locked away in the Derry Private Library in our Patreon, The Barons. As with anything we do, not to sound too egotistical, but it's true, we have a blast dissecting the episode. We talk about how King got involved, how his initial script evolved into what we see today, where we see King's work scream the loudest, and, you know, our relationship to the X-Files. Shocker, we're big fans. And if you're listening to this today, again, February 8th, we're having a fun watch-along of the episode tonight for our patrons on Discord. So if you want to get on that, head over to www.patreon.com/thebarons and become a patron. In addition to the watch-along, you'll get access to hundreds upon hundreds of hours of exclusive content we haven't unlocked. From one-offs like this, to our dozens of King commentaries on your favorite King films, to our in-depth archival series that goes deep into King's uncollected works, to our Dark Tower Detour spinoff series with Dan's. I mean, look, we're done with the Dark Tower, all 7 books. This is your chance to get more Dark Tower content, and you can get it. So, join up. You'll get all that content and more, because we got spinoff series for Stranger Things, 4 episodes, Talkin' Hawkins, huge, huge event from last summer. And because we are crazy, and because we never have enough homework to do, Randall is actually leading another podcast. It's a spinoff in there called The Crichton Cast. Yep. If you think that we gave a good critical eye to Stephen King, well, we're doing the same thing for Michael Crichton. And look, if you're going to love it, if you read well beyond the gates of Jurassic Park, The Andromeda Strain is waiting for you right there, and we're going to be covering Sphere next. And that's not all. Look, I can't sit here and outline everything that's in there. Just rest assured and trust me that you will be overwhelmed when you log in, just as I am every time I go in to find out all the stuff that we have to promote. But I've yammered long enough. So enjoy this episode. Join our Patreon, and I'll see you over long days and pleasant nights.
My friendship to all of you precludes my involvement with any one of you. But if you want to make love, then I do too, and I'll be right there behind you.
The conquest of fear lies in the moment of its acceptance and understanding that what scares us most is that which is most familiar, most commonplace. A book on the shelf, collecting dust amongst the rest of the spine surrounding it, an unassuming artifact. It's been said that the fear of the unknown is an irrational response to the excesses of the imagination. But our fear of the everyday, of the lurking stranger and the sound of footfalls on the stairs, the fear of violent death and the primitive impulse to survive are as frightening as any X-File, as real as the acceptance that it could happen to you. Greetings, constant listeners. I hope it wasn't too hard passing through security at the J. Edgar here in D.C. Apologies for the low lighting, you see. This is where they keep FBI's most unwanted, the Losers Club. In the event you missed the nameplate on my desk, I'm Special Agent Michael, former cigarette-smoking man, Rothman, and today we're talking X-Files, and with good reason. Because as you'll see in the manila folder before you, this particular case file can be traced all the way back to one name. You know him, Stephen King. Yes, on February 8th, 1998, the master of horror left our associates, Mulder and Scully, an early Valentine, a spooky doll holding a note card that read, "Chinga." What does that mean? Well, we're here to discuss. But fortunately, for our sake, and my sake, I'm not alone down here in the basement. He's been known to howl at the moon, but today he's the one with the silver bullet. Please introduce yourself.
This is Wolfman. I want popcorn, Mommy Gerber. And nice. I have been a constant X-Files head since its inception. I started watching it when it started airing, and it was one of the first shows that this and Seinfeld that I started religiously watching every week, my introduction to television. And I'm really excited to talk about Stephen King's contribution in season 5.
Well, I'm glad to have you here. You've been through the thick of it with us with the black oil. You've had it in your eyes before, and I've had to save you from Russian prisons. So, right. You know, big day to have you here. But look, we're not alone, because sadly, we won't be taking any trips to Juniper Hill today, but we are going to be hearing from one of their major managers over there. Who's that?
Well, you know, often I've been told I'm very irresistible. In honor of the monologue to lead this episode off, this is Justin Donnie Faster Gerber. I think people might be confused. People might have thought, oh, wait, are we doing an episode on Irresistible? The episode? Because that's what that monologue is.
That is the monologue. That's a good ear. Yeah.
I was like, did Mulder say this in Chinga?
No, I don't remember this. I went through all the monologues and I was like, well, this one fits. Well, I could replace Donnie with Stephen King, and then I kind of just replaced Book. So, yeah, anyway.
Well, it's great. Listen, yeah. Actually, you know what's funny? I came to the show probably a month or two into its initial run. I know Mac really liked it a lot. And he's actually, I think, the one that was like, hey, you should check this out, even though he's the younger. It's one of the first times that had happened, I think. And yeah, I watched it pretty religiously through, I want to say, season 6 during its first run. And then I think I went to college. And when I was in college, my first time around,
you know,
there was no DVR.
Yeah.
There was
too
no
busy.
DVR. There was no, if you had a roommate, you know, that's a wrap. You can't really. If you miss an episode, you're screwed. So,
yeah.
And I eventually did go back and I bought all the DVDs a few years later, and I did start to finish watch it, and including the episodes I hadn't seen. And then I rewatched it again leading up to the reboot back in 2015. Is that right?
The first season 10? 2016. It was early 2016, but we had the screeners 2015.
Yeah. So, and yeah. I think it was, I was really racking my brain in terms of rewatch, like start to finish. Besides The Wire, which I did last year, I think this is the first show and only show I've ever rewatched.
From
not including, you know, you pop on Seinfeld on syndication, but you literally sat down and like rewatched start to finish.
Yeah.
Ever. I've done it twice. It's, you know, we can talk. It's for another podcast for another day, but I still think this is one of the greatest shows of all time.
Oh yeah, no, that's you guys leaped ahead to the first question, but I think that's as good. It's good. I think we should start our origin stories with X-Files, so this is good. But we have one more origin story to get into. You know, you've seen her on social media. You've heard her discuss Supernatural last year when the Winchester boys wrapped up and went on for one final ride, which actually has connections to the X-Files, actually, surprisingly. And she's certainly a spooky gal. Who's our new recruit here at the Losers Club?
This is Sammy, do you think I'm spooky, Kuykendall.
Oh, well, interesting. So what was the first time you saw the X-Files?
Well, obviously, the X-Files came out the year I was born, so I did not watch it in syndication like you guys.
Same year as our Lord Jurassic Park.
It's a great year. 93 is a great year. But my dad is like a huge fan. Like his dog's name was Scully. When Mike took me to Wizard World and I paid $300 to get my picture taken with Gillian Anderson, it's hanging in our living room of my dad's house because it's like the first thing you see when you come in.
You're shaking.
Oh, I was in shambles. Yeah. But But yeah, I used to sneak down like when it was playing, and I would sneak down because I wasn't allowed to watch it. And my dad would find me behind the couch because I would usually fall asleep during the credits, like the beginning credits, because the music was like so nice to listen to. Mm-hmm. So the music always like kind of puts me to sleep a little bit, because I would like think like I'm going to stay up late and watch this with my dad, like, and be sneaky behind the couch. But I never usually made it past those couple of minutes. Mm-hmm. And then I watched it after I watched Twin Peaks for the first time, and I wanted to stay in the 90s, and I was like, I'm gonna start this. And I have since watched it from beginning to end 3 times, and that was 8, maybe 7 years ago. So
3 times through?
Yes. It's Jesus. My favorite show of all time, I would say.
Wow.
I think
it's safe to say that, like, between the four of us, I think we all would put this in our top, at least our top five of all time.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely. Yes.
Right? So. Yeah.
Even despite the shitty shit. Like,
Well, that's the great thing that we can talk about now. We can wait, but
yeah,
I mean, like,
go for it.
There's
go for it.
So much material in the show, and they did such a great job. This is kind of right before through lines were happening in mm-hmm. television. You usually had like a case of the week, or a sitcom joke of the week, and that was it. There was no like, if you miss this episode, you were screwed. And this is kind of going into that lane. However, at the end of the day, half the episodes were Monsters of the Week episodes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you really could just jump in and say, hey, watch this episode from season 7 and not feel lost at all.
Yeah.
And that was the strength of the show. And I think that is why I compared to something like Game of Thrones. We can all sit here and say how great Game of Thrones was for 5 or 6 years. But at the end of the day, and I think I don't speak for myself, they botched the ending.
Totally.
And because Game of Thrones is all about getting to that ending, it's kind of a failure in many ways. Whereas The X-Files has 6 different endings,
yes,
pretty much.
It does.
And again, there's so many great episodes there and so many great standalones that it doesn't really affect whether what you think about the last season or two. It doesn't really change my opinion of the first, you know, 5 years especially.
Yeah, know? No, I think that's one of the biggest powers of the show. And even from the inception, like I watched it from the beginning. I had seen it when it first debuted, just because I was a voracious Fox watcher. Like I was obsessed with The Simpsons. You know, I had everything Simpsons merchandise. And so when this popped on,
Kindred the Embraced.
That was another show that was around.
Remember
that time?
The vampire show that tried to do that?
Oh, God. Yeah, I do. Yeah. But there was like, they had like Married with Children. And so I was like really obsessed with those two shows. And when I remember seeing the preview for this and just being like, oh my God, I have to watch this, because I was just really into the supernatural stuff, especially aliens. And And so I think, like, for me, what was so great is exactly what you just said, is that, I mean, I would have people sleep over, my friends sleep over from school. And even if they didn't watch it, we were able to tune in. Like, because I wouldn't miss a show. Like you were saying, like, if you missed a show, like, you know, I mean, granted, we had a VCR, but if you missed, like, I always had to watch it. So it was Friday nights, and I had sleepovers, and everyone would just be able to watch it because it was so easy to go in. Even the ARC episodes, you could still enjoy it, like, for its spooky environment. You know, granted, if people are, you know, not really familiar with it, they really definitely prefer the
Monster
of the Week
episodes.
Well,
it's like Law & Order with aliens.
Yeah,
like,
it is.
That's what I always, like, compared it to, and people would be like, oh, what are you watching? And I'm like, it's like Law and Order, but everyone is way cooler, and it has Gillian Anderson in it and David Duchovny, which is like worth watching, regardless of what the story is about. They are so, like,
they're the spine.
Easy to watch, and like your eyes can never, like, be taken away from them. That, like, I would watch episodes that I didn't even like just for like their stupid little conversations that they had.
And we'll probably get into that a little bit with this episode for sure. But Mac, we've talked a long time about how the funny episodes for us, you know, the type of episodes we liked growing up, have varied over the years. For you, your experience has certainly changed with some of these episodes, right?
Well, yeah, you know, when I was young, when I was first watching this, I was about 10, 9,
yeah.
And I was very, very serious and very, very involved in the conspiracy of mm-hmm. the government covering up UFOs. So when we get to episodes, you know, that were tongue in cheek and just totally goofy, I was always really furious that they weren't taking it seriously. And I did not like those episodes. I was always like, where's the black oil? But, you know, obviously, as you grow up, you realize this is a TV show.
Yeah.
And upon rewatches as well, so those episodes are some of my favorites now. And, and they just really stick out. But it's funny though, because like you said, I've rewatched this show. I've rewatched the first couple of seasons of 3 or 4 times probably, mm-hmm. because I was, as the DVDs originally were being released, I was picking them up and rewatching them. And then I did a whole rewatch right after I graduated college, because Justin, like he said, had all the DVDs and they were sitting there at our home. So I went through and finally watched that last season and probably most of the prior season that I had kind of stepped away from when I went to college, which is funny because you didn't really need to, like we were saying, you didn't need to watch every episode. But I feel like when Doggett came in, there was a bit of the through line where, with trying to find Mulder. So it was kind of like
reboot
at that point. If Total I did reboot. Miss an episode, I did kind of feel like I can't really continue. And unfortunately, yeah, it was before DVR and all that. So it's nice to have rewatched all this, but upon rewatches, there's episodes that didn't quite connect with me because I was just too young to understand the subtext or the themes maybe. But when you get older and you start realizing, oh, like there's that episode, what was the episode called, Justin? The one with David Duchovny where he's like living a past life almost.
Oh, The Field Where I Died.
Yeah, The Field Where I Died. Yeah. And like that hit me so much the more Robert Frost as an adult than it did
it's
when
Samantha
I first watched
episode,
it.
It's a Samantha episode, isn't it?
Through.
No.
Oh, it's not?
It's like a Civil War past.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's such a strange episode. But yeah, it's just stuff like that, you know, and it's like the gift that keeps giving. And I agree.
It really
it's,
is. You know, I like
upon
that.
Upon rewatches, you're always finding something new. And I really appreciate that. It just lends itself to that.
Well, it's kind of like almost the Halloween franchise in a way, because you could really go to certain, you know, any different arc you would want. Like I've heard from people that have just done straight Monster of the Week episodes.
Those
where they
are
do
my
their
favorite.
Rewatch. Yeah. I've heard that, like, you know, as crazy as the Alien arc is, if you just watch the arc episodes, I think Justin, you said this, is that if you really just watched only the arc episodes from beginning to end, it actually works pretty well. Like it's not,
I think,
like
the show could have been just the arc and the show could have been just the Monsters of the Week, but I think for me though, I think the marriage of those two is what stands out.
Yeah,
especially from that era of television.
Yeah,
where people just weren't doing that.
What for you though? I mean, because I'm similar as Mac, I would get so frustrated, especially in season 8 when it was the Search for Mulder episodes, because those episodes were so cool. And, you know, you'd see him pop up in the desert and shit. And it was just like, oh, my God, what's going on? And I would get so frustrated because it really was potpourri. Like you never knew. Or it was like a Russian roulette. Like you just never knew when those episodes are going to come. And until you get that, you know, that preview at the end. And look, this is way beyond the internet. Before, like, Wikipedia existed, you could see who was going to direct the next episode and all this other shit. Like, yeah. You really were dependent on those, that preview for the next episode.
Did they
episode.
Show commercials for it
they
through
did,
the week, though?
Like, they
here,
were, like, little
this
clips.
Week on,
yeah,
like,
it was a little bit more, you know, elaborate than what we would get on Mad Men or something like that. But, you know, it certainly was just a teaser. And so even sometimes with those, like, you never really knew, because a lot of the arc episodes at that time were so elusive. Like, they would wedge in things with Mulder in like episodes that kind of were arc related but weren't. So it was a huge arc head. It was a little frustrating. But Justin, were you when you grow up, were you obsessed with the arc or were you more into the Monsters?
I was obsessed with the arc, but I know you're not a big fan of this episode, Mike, but when I remember watching the Postmodern Prometheus episode.
Perfect.
Yeah. And at the end of the episode, how bizarre that episode was, and I thought, oh my God, you can do this on television.
Yeah.
As opposed to You Can't Do This on Television, which was, of course, a Nickelodeon TV show.
That was a great show, yeah.
And that kind of blew my mind. I was like, oh, you can do a black and white kind of funny episode about this monster that goes and they visit Cher at the end, and there's like a touching moment between Mulder and Scully, and then somebody closes a storybook. And this is, and then 2 weeks ago, you know, we had Mulder in like
Russia.
This extremely dramatic episode with the black oil and stuff. It's like, I cannot believe you can do this. But they did, and they were the best at it. And they're still the best at it.
I agree
back.
With, yeah, because I think, you know, people, a lot of, I haven't watched Fringe, and people say that that's supposed to be like kind of like the sister equivalent of this.
I think Fringe is
I want to check it
very,
out. I've been
very
wanting
good.
To watch it.
Yeah.
It was only 5 seasons. I think there's a season in there that's kind of like, why are you doing this?
The fourth season gets really kind of
rebooty.
Strange.
But it ends so strong.
It ends so strong in season 5.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. Did I'll you watch Fringe?
No, but I've been wanting to.
And they kind of say, by the way,
it does,
within the show, they tease that it exists in the X-Files universe.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because like out of the only other sandbox I could think that could come close to this is one that we covered last year on here, which I already teased before, is Supernatural. Because same, it's almost exactly, it's we were discussing it last night, like how it's interesting that when you look at the arc for the X-Files from beginning to end, like season five is pretty much like the end of like the original era, where it's like the sort of core arc where they're going, and it kind of sort of the most, for the most part, wraps up before the Fight the Future movie, where they kind of have to do a soft reboot. And Supernatural is the same way, and so much of Supernatural is built in the same style as X-Files, where it's like you have the monster of the week, you have the arc, you have the brothers, and then a lot of the filmmakers that were, especially Kim Manners, who directed Jenga, was instrumental in creating that world for Supernatural. So yeah. I think there's clearly X-Files was instrumental in carving out the mold for television writing going forward, and I think that's certainly what we gravitated towards. But let me ask a question here. When we were first watching The X-Files, and this includes you too, when you were rewatching, mm-hmm. were you also reading Stephen King at the same time?
I was well into Stephen King at this point. So
yeah, for sure. So for you, because obviously the oldest of us, like where were you in like King's Dominion? Like had you already read like the majority of his core works, or were you just starting?
I had read, like, this came out in 98, right?
Yeah.
I read all of his 70s and 80s novels. At this point, not the mm-hmm. Bachman books. And in terms of the 90s, I think I probably read Insomnia at this point. Desperation, I think. I had not started The Dark Tower until later on in life. Mm. But yeah, I loved King at this point, definitely.
Yeah. So you had heard when this episode was built, because I remember they built it. Yeah, it was a big deal.
Huge deal. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And what was your initial thoughts going when you finished, you know?
Well, I think
then?
The episode itself is kind of just not to be disparaging, because there's a lot of just fun, like middle of the road episodes. But, you know, there's not a lot of twists and turns in this episode.
No.
It really is just, oh, there's a possessed killer doll.
Yeah.
You know, there was no spin at the end. Like, oh, actually, it was the mother that was doing it, but she was projecting onto the doll, you know?
Yeah.
But as a kid, I think I still thought it was pretty fun just to have Stephen King involved, and we can talk about the King's Dominion later on too. And I feel the same way as I did then. It's not a bad episode by any means, but it's not like it's a top 50 episode.
I mean, it's better than some of the ones in the new
seasons. Sure. It's probably better than some episodes of season five. You know, I mean, it's not, like I said, it's not really bad. It's just kind of.
Yeah,
just
in
here.
Season five, we have Kill Switch, which is one of the worst episodes
is awful.
Of the whole entire series.
Is that the one
series?
That's like right after it, right?
It's
and
right
that followed
after.
It, yeah.
It's right after, yeah.
So it's like
in
a
good way, because
2 weeks.
With that showing up right after, you're kind of like, whatever you thought about Chinga, you're kind of like, oh, actually, it was not that bad.
Not that bad.
You watched Kill Switch.
So, Mac, do you remember, because you watched in the original run, do you remember this episode at all, like when it first ran?
You know, I was telling you the other night, like I really... didn't. I knew that Stephen King wrote it. I knew that there was like the buzz around it because of the way they promoted it. So I was really expecting it to be pretty scary. But you know what's funny is that I probably didn't love the episode. Mm-hmm. And it's probably because of the fact that there's so much humor in it with mm-hmm. Mulder whenever he pops up, which I love now.
I know.
It's just like some of the best
That's
parts
the best
of
part
that
of episode.
Episode.
No. I'm just imagining but a little Mac in the living room just being like, God damn it.
That's right.
Like
let's get back
like,
to the doll. But again, I hadn't read Stephen King. You know, I'd seen probably a bunch of Stephen King horror films at that time, but I'd not read anything except for The Gunslinger. So I was excited because I knew that he was a big name in horror and I had seen some of the films, but it wasn't like Justin, who was really invested, who had read all those books. But I don't know what I was expecting, but it, like you said, it was very straight-laced, Justin. It's kind of, there's no twists and turns. It's just kind of like, this is what it is. I was kind of hoping that there was a twist at the end where, or when you find out about the doll, that there is a history there, but it's like, no, it's just a haunted doll.
Yeah.
Like, there's no well, the doll looks so much dive. Like, Talking what's the Melissa, the character Melissa in the episode.
Yeah
that's true.
I thought maybe there was something going on there, but nope.
Just, the doll just found it in the water.
I mean, it's clearly tied into the Twilight Zone.
Oh, yeah. Which we'll get into,
like,
for
it's
sure.
such a huge nod to that throughout the whole thing.
Not just that, but it's a good life as well.
Yeah
that's absolutely. Why I asked you, Anthony.
What about you, Sammy? So,
obviously in 98. Like,
well, I know, but yeah.
But
you know,
I mean,
Sammy
I had in 98, although I hadn't watched the episode, I was familiar with King because I'd watched the It miniseries because my sister told me it was like a funny story about a clown, and we rented it at Blockbuster. So like at that, you know, I was traumatized from it.
Yeah.
But I liked it. It's like a roller coaster. I was like, even though I was fucking petrified, I was like, ooh, like I want to go again. So I was familiar with King. And then obviously when I watched the show, I had read it and like Salem's Lot and Pet Sematary. So I had read like his big ones. So I was, when I saw it, like, because of course I'm the IMDb queen. Every time I watched a new episode, I would go on IMDb and read before just so I could be like, who is the writer? Who did this? And I was like, oh, like, I know that name.
Yeah.
So I was actually really excited to watch the episode. And then like majorly let down.
Well, we'll get into that in just a second. So I just wanted to set the foundation that, you know, King and X-Files for all of us going into the X-Files, it wasn't really black oil and water, you know, they weren't separate. We knew the two entities going into this. And I think that's important when we're discussing going forward to this, because we can see the DNA, you know, there's a lot of DNA here. And I want to kind of break it down a little bit in this episode. Mm-hmm. Look, we could talk Files for miles, but we've got a case to discuss. And wouldn't you know it, I just got the facts I've been waiting for from our good friends at the Derry Public Library.
Mike Hanlon, if you see...
Hey, excuse me, sir. Do you have Prince Albert in a can? You do? Well, you better let the poor guy out.
Yeah, Mike Hanlon, that I had to go, that I had to get cleaned up. Tell him. Tell him. Tell him I'll see him tonight.
Get out. Last chance, told you. Get out. Get out.
All right. Well, in the Derry Public Library, I'm just going to give a good rundown of this episode real fast and some production history, too. And then we'll get into the nitty gritty of what works and what doesn't, et cetera, et cetera. So, as I mentioned before, this was directed by Kim Manners, who is arguably one of the best directors of the series.
One of my favorite Supernatural episodes, Mystery Spot, from season 3, is episode 11.
Well, for X-Files, he helmed 52 episodes, four of which were nominated for Emmys. Didn't take one home, unfortunately. But as you mentioned, he was instrumental in lensing Supernatural, but he passed away from lung cancer on January 25th, 2009. This episode was written by Stephen King and Chris Carter, which we'll get into soon. It aired on February 8th, 1998, the same weekend that saw the release of The Replacement Killers and Blues Brothers 2000. So great time for pop culture.
Good time for movies.
Yeah, right. And so this is crazy. So it was viewed by 21.33 million viewers upon its release, which is just...
Yeah, when I was rewatching all these, I would do the same thing Sammy was doing and go to Wikipedia and look at the numbers. Like even in like the later seasons... The numbers were unbelievable compared to who's watching live TV today.
It's unreal.
Yeah, I feel like that's more than like, unbelievable. Probably Stephen King's gotten for a movie at that point, like in theaters.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty wild when you think of just how ubiquitous this show was at this point. And we'll get into that when we talk about the two stars, especially just because this is like peak X-Files at this point in terms of popularity. Yeah. Like it's so loud and deafening. Well, anyway, this got mixed reviews. My buddy Zach Hanlon, who literally wrote a book on the show, it's Monsters of the Week, The Complete Critical Companion to the X-Files. It's a great read. He gave it a C- in his retrospective review on AV Club. He wrote, "This episode seems like one of those ideas that sounds really, really great until someone thinks about it for more than a minute." Gotta agree with Zach there. And he's a huge constant reader, by the way. But it does have fans because, and I don't know if we can debate this, but Chinga earned the fourth spot on Screen Rant's 10 scariest episodes of the X-Files, which is like, what? Like, anyway. So how did this... I don't either. There's so many scarier moments in this show. So how did this all come together? It's pretty simple. So King and David Duchovny were on an episode of Jeopardy. They're on the 1995 Celebrity Jeopardy Game 1. And King won. Because as we've discussed on all our episodes for the past 5 years, King knows a lot about
pop
culture.
Smart,
He's pretty fucking smart. So, you know, but so is Duchovny, because Duchovny is very similar to his Mulder character in that he's very he's hyper-intellectual and he was very hyper-literate. So a big showdown there. But anyway, King approached Duchovny and said that he was a fan of the show. He wanted to work on an episode. And basically, Duchovny went to Carter. And they basically, Carter wanted him to write for Millennium, which in hindsight probably works better for King. But he basically said, look, we'll do it. We'll make it happen. King worked on the script remotely, gave it to Carter. Carter heavily edited the story because he, as he said, Stephen wasn't used to writing for Mulder and Scully. The Mulder and Scully story in his original draft didn't quite work. So Carter finalized the draft, and one of the biggest changes was, I guess, separating Mulder and Scully. And Manners, who was the director of the episode, he kind of said, you know, I was really excited to be able to direct a Stephen King piece. And when it was all said and done, there's very little Stephen King in it. The nuts and bolts were his, but that was really one of Chris' scripts. And Gillian Anderson reportedly struggled with her own line. She said, you know, the way the script was originally written, read to me, initially seemed as if Scully was kind of stepping up to the plate and played along with the sheriff's humor. And so she played it tongue in cheek, and Carter was like, no, this is supposed to be serious. So clearly, it's just a little lines crossed, as Led Zeppelin says, communication breakdown.
Well, see, I was under the impression that, because there's a number of episodes this season, especially, because there's only 20.
Yeah.
And I think there usually was like 25, 26 around this time. But I thought that they were both filming. So that's why David Duchovny wasn't in a lot of this episode, because he was shooting the movie.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is the internet. So it could be, the background could be all fucking loose. It would make sense because...
Yeah, because I think there's another one around this time where it's mostly Duchovny, mm-hmm. and she's hardly in it. I think that's because they were doing their scenes and stuff like that for the movie.
That's usually why they do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, this the production for this season was, if I recall from a lot of the commentaries I used to watch, was just hell, because they were filming the movie at the same time.
So, oh, really?
Because you're doing a movie. You're doing a movie plus 20 episodes.
It's their last season in Vancouver, too. Yeah. So they're probably flying back and forth.
So, but when it comes to Chinga, like, what do we make of this? Do we think that this is like a hatchet job in the script, or do we just feel like King is not a good fit for the X-Files? Justin?
I don't know. I think at the end of the day, it's a curiosity piece, right? Because, wow, this is an episode that Stephen King did. So that's worth recommending alone, right? Mm-hmm. Even though at the end of the day, maybe he didn't write that much of it.
Yeah.
But I still feel like Manners even kind of alluded to, that the bones of Stephen King are there. Mm-hmm. It's set in Maine. I believe that the characters surrounding Mulder and Scully sound very Kingian to me.
Yes, yeah.
Like, they feel very Kingian, but I see what Chris Carter was saying, that he had to step in and kind of rework a lot of the dialogue for Mulder and Scully. I believe that too.
Yeah, I guess maybe it's.
But like I said, it's kind of like an inoffensive episode. I was shocked at how graphic it was.
Yeah, I mean, it's very violent.
It's very graphic for that time, especially.
Yeah,
and you know, it's like a fun disposable episode. I wasn't bothered by it.
I mean, they've
done
graphic, though.
I've seen dozens of worse episodes.
Oh, yeah, and especially at this point. I mean, they're...
Because Home had already aired at this point, which got, like, a fucking, you know, viewer discretion advised.
Yeah.
Like, but, I mean, yeah, I guess it was more bloody than most X-Files episodes I'd watched.
It was, yeah. I feel like you don't...
There's a little clawing eyes out.
Yeah. I know, yeah. It was like Dario Argento, like...
It was, yeah. Mac.
I feel like it's strange because I know Chris Carter went in and probably tweaked, you know, Scully and Mulder's dialogue, but I think that was a detriment in a sense, because for it being so violent and like the doll stuff, especially that opening sequence, is very jarring.
Yeah.
And then you have like Mulder watching porn. I think that stuff, it takes away from the episode. So it's like, I think you could have kept their voices in there, but not, it's kind of like it kills the tension every time you're like, ooh, this is really intense. Like, oh man, this person gets it this way. And then we're hopping to like this like really jovial, light, funny scene with Mulder. It kind of kills the tension.
I agree.
So it's like you can't actually get invested in the horror element of it, which is Stephen King's forte. So I don't know. I feel like I understand the need to go in there and kind of make sure that they still are sounding like the characters we know and love. But and some of that stuff is pretty classic. I mean, it's the stuff you remember, you know, like the pencils in the ceiling and stuff. But I think this is the wrong episode to put it in. So I don't know.
I wonder.
You have a lot of funny episodes this season too. So this, I know when I was first watching it, I wasn't that into it. I mean, back to back, you have this and then what, Bad Blood, like a couple episodes later. And so it's.
This is a bad stretch.
They're just prepping their way for season six, which is all coming.
I know.
Yeah.
Which is just, we got to do a whole episode on season six.
I feel like, if you look at it, there's a lot of comedy episodes this season. And then you have like really, really intense, dark, through line
really
stuff with Black Oil, and you know, you're like, what?
So like February 1998, Mac, you're just like fucking fuming at this point. just so angry, just sitting there like, are you like, what's going on with my fucking show? Like, even the
I'm like, we're doing this weird bug thing. Come on, like, let's go.
Here's a question though I have, and this is based on a lot of the book episodes that we've been doing lately, because this is 98. So, you know, Bag of Bones is this year as well. And, you know, he's coming off of Desperation Regulators. He's not exactly like the hook king anymore. You know, like, well, you can look at his books and like immediately tell you the hook and pitch of that book within a 5-second elevator pitch, like you could in the 70s and 80s. It's a little more like, I feel like a lot of his horror, and a lot of this is emblematic of just him as a writer trying to distance himself from that hooky horror, is a little more cerebral. It's a little more fragmented. It's kind of a like I was saying before, a potpourri, like, of different horror tropes and stuff. And I feel like you kind of get that in this episode, because it's like, you know, the killer doll that happens to just make everyone kill themselves, like, that's a hook in itself. But then you have like the Dead Zone-esque foretelling of, like, you know, the person, the mother can see the deaths happening ahead of time. And It's just, there's a lot in this episode that I don't think you really needed, like, that many layers. Like, I think if you just kept it simple, it might have worked a little bit more. Maybe I don't know.
Yeah, I was confused as to why. Once again, I thought it was all going to be kind of explained, but here's the problem with the episode. This is the stuff I hate. Not to spoil, for instance, Sherlock, but there's a Sherlock finale where he falls off of a building And you think he's dead, but he survives somehow. And then they come back the next season and they give like 4 different scenarios as to how he might have lived. But then the episode ends and they kind of explain it away like, well, you don't really need to know how this happened, which I hate.
It's so lazy.
And this episode ends with Mulder saying, I think some things are better left unexplained.
And then they explain
it. But in terms of some of the other stuff going on in the episode, though, that's not explained. Or like, why is the doll possessed? Like, that type of thing.
Well, that was my thought, was at the end, I thought that when they started introducing the father being on the boat, I thought, Well, maybe his soul or something connected to the doll now, and that's why it's killing the people that this woman's trying to sleep with or whatever, close to her. And then it's just a haunted doll. And so it didn't make sense that she was having these visions at all, because she has really, really no connection. And then also with the daughter being autistic, I think they say in the episode, that really had nothing to do with anything, except it just, like, I guess, a red herring, I guess, that she might be somehow imposing her, like, subconscious on the doll or something, or using the doll to act out. But then it was like, no, it's just a haunted doll. It just happened to be this girl's doll.
Yeah.
There was a lot.
It's very strange.
And then you have, like, Scully that's on her trip, but then she's not on her trip, but she keeps saying that she's on her trip. And it's just like, I feel like it's a little convoluted. And I feel like I don't know. My argument would be that it's because of, obviously, the hatchet job of just what's going on with between Carter and King. But even when you look at King, like, as a writing, then it just felt like there was a lot going on in his books too.
Well, he's just coming off of the, like, Oscar wins for Misery, right? Or, like,
well, that's, you know, like 8 years later though. So,
oh,
it's
later?
Like, yeah,
98. Misery won.
No, 1990 was
Misery's like 90.
Oh, yeah, okay. So, and then when was Shawshank?
So Shawshank was 94.
94. Okay, 94, so it's like a couple years. So he's trying to, and then like 8 Mile, like he wrote. So he's trying to not write horror.
So I mean, like,
or 8 Mile, Green Mile, fucking the Green Mile.
Stephen King and Curtis Hanson, you know, present 8 Mile.
Oh, God.
But no, but that's the thing. It's like, but you're right in that sense that he is in this area where, you know, we talked about on it. It's like he wanted to get away from, like,
it's
the,
like,
grand
he's ashamed
horror
of himself.
But, like, and then he goes and does this more cerebral type horror. And I feel like if this was written by King in the 80s, in the 70s, King, it would have just been the doll. Like, you don't have to have, like, all these.
And he wouldn't have remembered writing it.
Yeah, well, that's.
Well, I think you also have to look at it. It's TV, right? And they're trying to produce 20 episodes of a TV show. They only have so much time to do it. It's not like they had a whole year to work on this script only. You know, I feel like if you had a whole year to work on this script, or like if this was a movie, it would have been a totally different situation. I feel like it would have been smoother. They would have excised some things along the way. You don't get like 5 drafts of a TV script. It's kind of like you got to knock it out. Mm-hmm. I feel like, I mean, it's basically what Manders and Carter had to do is, oh my God, well, we really need to work on this, but we start shooting in 2 weeks. So, you know, and you've already got production stuff set up. You've got locations already done. You've got the casting already done. So now what do you do? And I feel like it's always a rush job. That's why serialized television like this is always like a miracle that they're ever able to pull it off. I don't know how they do it.
It's just crazy too, because it's like this time of his career, it's almost like he's in this weird sort of second Renaissance King, but it's like a pseudo Renaissance in a weird way. Like it's like miniseries Renaissance, because you have like the Shining miniseries is like 97.
But writing wise, he had done like Desperation Regulators and then and Bag of Bones came out in 98.
Yeah,
so
I mean he's.
It's kind of a strange period for him anyways, right? Writing wise. So
because he did the only like a couple years before that he had done like the the Michael Jackson's Ghost in 96. So it's just like he's kind of, it's almost like this like pop culture king in a weird way, where he's just trying his hand in like a bunch of different places that he didn't do before.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. It's interesting.
Had he written for television before?
Oh yeah, okay. Yeah. Like he had done The Stand. I mean, he wrote The Stand.
Okay. Well, yeah, obviously. But I mean, like original stories for television before.
Yeah. Well, kind of though. I mean, because like his original stories had been adapted for like Tales from the Dark Side and
okay.
But I mean, nothing like up until this point, like this really was like his first TV episode that he'd done, like in terms of like. Kind of
an original story.
Yeah.
Because when we were watching it last night, I was like, gosh, there's so many like short stories that he's had that like they could have taken and put Mulder and Scully in. Like imagine like Mulder and Scully and Grey Matter, or like even like the Boogeyman. Like there were things that they could have taken of his, which I'm sure, they weren't going to do. But like I would have rather seen one of his original stories that were better than this with
elements of the monkey from Skeleton Crew in this.
Yeah.
With the monkey is possessed and try and get rid of it by throwing it in the lake at the end and everything else. And
so he's just pulling from different stories a little bit and adding a couple Ayas in there to make it seem like a king.
Which is kind of funny because like it's like what you're saying, Justin. It's like it's almost like he had the it's like, I want to do this. You're like, all right, well, hey, we're in production. Like, let's get this. Well, I mean, if it was 95 that they were doing that Celebrity Jeopardy, they had time to kind of rework it and everything. I don't know. But
Carter doesn't like people touching his stuff. You know, like when we saw Gillian Anderson, she was like talking about how pissed she was about like some of the writing like changes. And I feel like because it's his baby, it's like someone comes in with, an original thing and he's like, don't touch it.
I gotta say, this is peak X-Files popularity probably, right?
Yeah.
This season.
Yeah.
So if I was him and Stephen King came in, I would be flattered, but I'd also, it's also kind of like I want to make sure my stamp is on this. This is mine.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. So I don't know if I would, knock him for that, but at the same time, obviously as time goes on, but he was also, Storm of the Century was coming out the following year.
Yeah.
So he was, I don't know how much time, like you said, I don't know how much time he had to dive into this, but King's churning this stuff out like every day, I mean, the guy's writing like three novels a year. So like, I feel like, I don't know how much time he spent, and they said that they never met. It was all just like sending drafts back and forth. So I'm sure it wasn't, an intense passion project. But I'm sure he wrote it, sent it, and then there was just a couple of tweaks, and then
he probably went out for a walk, maybe got some stack of pancakes one Sunday morning, came home and was like, oh shit, I gotta write this script.
Split a lobster roll with Tabby.
Had one of those old VHS tapes that had like an X-Files episode on it, and like put it in. I was like, all right, I got the gist of this, and then knocked it out. But anyway, here's some straight facts. So the original name of this episode was Chinga, but it was rejected by Fox as it was an objectionable word in some Spanish-speaking areas.
Means fuck,
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the name Bunghani was substituted, which is a rude sounding but nonsensical term. I don't know. I think bung honey sounds worse though. But
yeah. Anyway. What does it mean?
Bung.
Shit honey?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bung means shit?
Yeah. I thought so.
Like bunghole. Like,
how's that any better?
Bungholio.
Exactly. Yeah. Good job, Fox. The ship in which Melissa's husband died is called Working Girl. And it could be, a reference to Situation Scully, but it could also be the reference to David Duchovny's film debut, which was Working Girl.
That was his film debut.
Yeah.
Wow. I know.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
I thought it was Beethoven.
I wish it was
Don't
Beethoven.
Don't Tell Mom. I thought it was Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter Said.
Well, I feel like they're all like, well, no, Beethoven's what, 92, I think, and Don't Tell Mom is 91. Yeah, well, for a long time, he was a sleazy guy in his roles, his early roles. It's interesting how he turned it. But, so the movie Mulder's watching.
Alien Probe.
Alien Probe,
yeah. But he says he calls it...
I couldn't see...
He says something.
I got the world's deadliest swarms.
Yes, world's deadliest swarms.
Which is great.
Like, that's what it sounds like.
I would save that for pound cake. But,
yeah. Yeah, well, and then this also marked the introduction, as Max said, the pencils. When you threw it up, like, without Scully, just would throw
the
pencils up.
Was this the introduction?
Yep, this is the first episode.
The first time.
Yeah. Wow.
So that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. But look, we've talked a little bit about them. I think we got to talk a lot about them now. I guess the FBI would call them the successful ones, the heroes. And the ones that we lock away, the villains.
I'm gonna have to kill this fucking clown. Welcome to the Losers Club, asshole!
We really don't have to go long here. I don't think the cast is that exciting, especially for an X-Files episode. But, you know, we got our core four. There's some interesting supporting King's Dominion stuff I saw, like Susanna Hoffman, who played Melissa Turner. She played Frances Boland in 11/22/63. Caroline Tweedle.
We'll save it for King's Dominion.
Well, I guess you could save it for King's Dominion, but I think we'd talk more about tropes in that, I guess. But like, yeah, I guess the Caroline Tweedle was in Dreamcatcher also. But that, I mean, out of the cast though, like, it really does boil down to Scully, Mulder, Chief Bonsaint.
Yeah, he's the Pangborn wannabe.
Yeah, Pangborn wannabe. Yeah, he's more like a Bannerman.
More Bannerman.
Yeah.
Bannerman stand-in, yeah.
Susanna Hoffman is Melissa Turner. So I don't know where we want to start. Do we have anything about the supporting cast here that seems exemplary to, like?
Well, it's quite interesting that everybody in the show want to have sex with Melissa, apparently. Like, yeah. Dave the
she
Butcher.
She was the only chick in town, evidently.
Man, Dave the Butcher, Buddy the Cop, they both... I thought maybe that also was going to have something to do with the twist.
Yeah, that's
but,
what I was saying.
But once again, nope. They just lusted after her. They both lusted after her. You know, I thought she did a good job, the actor who played Melissa.
She was fine.
It wasn't like anybody gave bad performances, per se. But it was just, you know, here's the material and here you go. Not a lot to bite on. Not a lot to chew on.
It's just a passing grade. Like, yes. It's nothing to write home about.
Yeah.
The only thing with that character I really didn't like was that it was very clear that she knew the doll was doing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But not once do we ever see her attempt to actually, like, do anything to the doll or stop the doll.
No. Well, maybe she's
get rid
scared.
Of the doll.
She nails the windows shut, right?
Well, she tries to keep it in the house, but, like, why are you keeping it in the house? Just get rid of it.
No, I disagree, actually. Because remember that when she's the daughter's sleeping, she goes up there. Maybe this is the 10th time she's tried to approach it quietly, but then the doll wakes up.
Mm. I'd be scared of it, too.
Don't you think you could quickly just... throw out the window or something?
No, it's taken over her mind.
I mean, obviously, as we see, Scully just shoves it in the microwave. So,
Scully's the queen. You know, that's probably why she's able to do it. She doesn't care
about
that stuff. She doesn't believe any of that crap.
But yeah, but when they go to the grocery store, everyone knows how creepy this person is. So it's like, it seems like there's like a renown. She's a little town renown. The girl
or
the
doll. A witch, right?
Yeah.
They don't really explore that.
No.
Yeah, they don't explore that or say why, except maybe she's like, you know, got this guy on the side, but then they say that he wasn't on the side, that he just, like, there was a romance that picked up after the
husband died. It was unrequited.
So
that was also strange. To lead you to believe that the stuff with the doll was happening for a while, but then they don't really talk about that.
No.
And so Melissa's a complicated character.
A little complicated, yeah.
An unresolved complicated character.
Yeah, well, you know, does she, and, you know, the hammer to the head, that's a little tough.
Yeah.
Tough to come back from.
Well, I'm surprised that also the Scully doesn't just go over and take the hammer away from her.
I know.
She's trying to get the doll. I know she knows what's going on, but
yeah.
Kind of like, get that hammer out of her hand.
What would you
stop that at least?
Do you think you have, I mean, because like the Butcher pretty much has some good grip on the situation, is able to at least call 911. Do you think you'd be able to fight Chinga?
Chinga. I love that the doll's name's Chinga.
Yeah, it's Chinga.
Yeah.
I would have loved to see a deleted scene in the Butcher's back room where he's like kung fu fighting Chinga.
Yeah.
Or like a Mortal Kombat character, like you could unlock Chinga and like she would come out, like,
oh,
and then
friendship.
You could see, yeah.
Do you think that, no, but like, it seems like it's a force that overtakes you. You have to fight it.
It's like The Happening.
But it is like The Happening. Yeah. It looks, maybe M. Night ripped off Chinga.
Who knows?
You could find out.
I think Mark Wahlberg like really drew from this episode.
Yeah, probably did. But I do wonder, like, is there any way you could have evaded it? Like, it seems like the Butcher was far enough where he was able to evade it. I'm trying to understand the mechanics of what what Shinga's power is, but
I don't think you can really.
Well,
I don't
think, like they said, you know, I think some things are better left unexplained.
Exactly. That's true. Exactly.
Well, that's such a cheat. It's like, fine.
It works though. You know, at least in this, where I'm sure at that point, this seems like a finish line thing. They're like, all right, well, we asked King to get involved.
We have
to
air it
to the end, you know? Yeah. Well, what about Chief Jack Bonsaint, who seems as if he's the pretty much like the archetype for Stephen King story here, where you're like,
I got the vibe that there was, it was poorly done, but it was almost like a romance that was kind of going on between Scully and this cop.
I know, it's weird.
Well, I think that
but
she was
I feel like that was probably lost
the...
in translation when Carter kind of took over and tried to fix things. That's what I felt. I felt like it was a bit of a mess.
Yeah, I think at the end, she's definitely playing it up to make Mulder jealous.
Jealous, yeah.
Because she doesn't, she's like, just some guy named Jack, and doesn't say it was the sheriff or anything like that.
That's right.
But he had been in a couple other episodes of X-Files already as a sheriff of some sort, right?
Hmm. Yeah, they use a lot.
They use Vancouver actors.
They use a lot of Vancouver actors.
Supernatural does the same thing.
Yeah, which, I mean, a lot of shows do. I mean, like, the funniest one is Miami Vice, in which the partner, this really iconic character in the beginning that turns on Crockett, ends up being a character two episodes later. But
well, Law and Order is the most famous. They help people do five different episodes.
It's unreal.
He was in four or three other episodes. It was Unrequited, Jose Chung's From Outer Space, and Dehen de Villettes.
Ooh.
Wow.
Dehen de, I can't say that. That's a creepy episode. Dane DeHaan, Jim Dooley.
yeah, that's a scary one.
That is a scary episode, though.
He's fine, but everybody's fine.
Nobody stands out. Yeah. You know.
Well, you know who does stand out? Gillian Anderson.
Oh my God! Let's be honest here. She's 100 out of 10 in this episode. I don't know. Something about like the main T-shirt and the jeans. I was like, okay.
Oh, yeah. And I love that shirt. Is available on Redbubble.
Yeah, you want it.
I want it so bad. I have screenshotted it and sent it to Mike with like birthday, you know. Yeah.
Well, I get you other gifts, so
but
know, we'll
this one is the
one,
coolest. Yeah. And like she just looks great in her sunglasses and her hair is like peak, you know, she's out of the shoulder pads.
Yeah. Ugh.
I love when she puts the little, like, because she puts her jacket on before she goes into the grocery store to be like, I'm like professional, you know, like it's to make them take her seriously. Like she's not like a little small girl.
And they do.
Well, and I was, the only thing I was kind of bummed is that she doesn't get a lot to eat in that episode because she puts, at the end, she's so starving, she puts the doll in the microwave and sets it to 3 minutes.
Well, she got and that
she
huge
now, she
lobster.
Sets it to 3 minutes. She sets it to 3 minutes, but she says, I think everyone knows you cook a doll at 2 minutes.
You do 2 minutes.
True.
Was it, I have a question about that restaurant scene. Was that meant to disgust people? Because that lobster looked unbelievable.
I think
I was so hungry watching him eat the lobster.
I love lobster, so I was pretty...
Michael die if he has lobster.
I would die. I would turn into an X-Files character. I would turn into Fluke Man if I had one.
Let's do it then.
Yeah.
Let's do it. Let's
our own resident Fluke Man.
Well, hey,
feed him in the toilet.
Find me an abandoned ship, and I'll go and live there afterwards. Ugh. But I think it's supposed to be like, this is Maine. You know? Like,
we have lobster!
Yes, that's very true.
You know? The thing I love about this era of the X-Files is that David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson were the hottest people on the planet, and they absolutely knew they were the hottest people on the planet. Like, there's a swagger to them in this season, but especially in Fight the Future. Like, in the first 5 minutes of Fight the Future, when they hit the scene in that movie, it's such an awareness of, like, yep, you've been waiting for us, you know, and it's great because like you were waiting for them.
Yes.
Like they were the fucking two coolest people on the planet and also the sexiest people on the planet. And this episode absolutely capitalizes on that. Like, you know, you have like the bathtub scene, you have Mulder fucking bouncing a basketball in his boxers. Like they're so sexualized at this point in the show. And I like that because it was the sexual intrigue, I think, that brought in many of those 22 million people. But I just love the self-awareness about it. Like they all know how fucking cool they are. And this is such a fun episode, fun era of the episodes of the show to go back to. But
yeah, I know it's a little jarring, but I enjoyed all the Mulder Scully phone calls.
Yes.
It's the best part of the episode.
Best part of the episode.
Oh no, yeah. I agree. I just think it that's the most memorable stuff and the most fun stuff in that episode. I think that's worth being there, but it's also, you know, I do think it's a detriment to the episode, but it's funny because any other show I'd be out. I would be like, oh no, they're self-aware of how like much of a thing they are. Mm-hmm. And usually that's not good for a show, but somehow they're able to wrangle that in this season. And yeah, it's absolutely, it's very tangible. And it's very much there. And that last sequence between the two of them in the office is just perfect.
Yeah. That's the magic. It's almost like when it ends there and then it goes back to the ship, I was like, no, you had the great punchline. That should have been the ending.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
yeah.
Love watching them together. Oh my God. I mean, it's, this is the fuel of the show.
You and everyone I know for
them.
If, or either of them.
I would shave 30 years of my life to have a night with both of them.
Oh, yeah, I would literally, if someone was like, you can never talk to any of your family again, you have to leave Mike, all the dogs.
You do that for $5, but. You know,
okay. All right.
You guys are really awful people.
I know.
That sounds like a really strong relationship.
Yeah. No, it's.
But it's Gillian Anderson.
I know,
like, I'm sorry.
Yeah, look,
like,
I love Gillian Anderson, but
oh,
you know,
I would in a
she's
second.
She's just a human being.
In a second.
So here's a question.
I kill everybody on this call.
Yeah, same. Jess.
All right,
murder you all.
At this point in the show, though, who's got the strongest flex? Is it Mulder or Scully?
What do you mean by flex?
Like, by just like
actual career,
in terms of like the show, the star power in the show, like who's winning?
I think she had emerged at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yes, she'd come into her own.
Yeah. Definitely. Once those shoulder pads went out.
Yep. And she wasn't standing on the little box anymore.
Yep.
Does this episode work better with the two of them in it?
Yes. Listen, I love a lot of episodes with them by themselves, but the X-Files always works better when they're both together.
Yeah.
Completely agree.
I wonder where...
you didn't need to not have Mulder in this one at all. I mean, I like that. I mean, those episodes are kind of fun, but I did like him constantly checking in and... Yeah,
well, I mean, literally together, like in the same scenes.
Yes, that's
like
what I mean.
Investigating a crime together. That's when it works best.
Yeah, yeah.
Not just him calling in the episode. I'm saying like together.
Because what they would usually do is they would, if they were together in this, and I'd love to, I tried looking for King's original script. I couldn't find it. But I just imagine that Mulder probably would have spent more time with Melissa. Melissa.
Scully would have been jealous.
Scully would have been with the sheriff, I think, with the morgue stuff, I imagine.
Yeah, it makes sense.
You know,
I mean, honestly,
it would have been the skeptic versus the believer, right? Because it would have been him with her dealing with the mythology of the doll, and then her with the sheriff trying to work out the logistics of the skepticism and everything else.
Yeah,
it would have been better if Queequeg was in it.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it would have been better if the big titty Bigfoot.
Oh, I love that. That's my favorite. All the time. I literally was we were in a Spirit, and I like grabbed a Bigfoot thing, and I was like, I wish it had like big old honkers on it, like this X-Files Bigfoot.
Like the X-Files one. Yeah.
He thick.
Did we miss Skinner?
I always miss Skinner.
Always.
But you know what? To be fair. Whenever Mitch Pileggi shows up in episodes, it's like, Skinner, you know, so it makes it special when he's not in every episode.
He's just their babysitter.
Yeah.
Like,
Could the lone gunman helped at all in this situation?
No. Not their episode.
Okay. Not their episode.
All right. Well, that's it for Heroes and Villains, I feel. Unless anyone has any other more sexual pining for either.
We'll wait for that in Pound
Cake. Okay, wait for Pound Cake. But for now, oh God, my head. I think it's Chinga. I think I'm having a nightmare. In a dreamscape.
If you think your dreams are disturbing, imagine the nightmares of Stephen King.
What are you, some sort of a horror movie guy?
No, Clyde, I'm a literary guy.
Oh God, that's awful.
All right, well, nightmares and dreamscapes, we talk about what we liked and what we didn't like. Let's start with what we liked, because obviously we've talked a lot about what we've criticized a lot about this episode, but what was a dreamscape here? Mac, what were some things that you did really like about this episode?
The kills.
Yeah.
I think they're really effective and really disturbing, especially her husband with the like scythe through his head on the boat.
Yeah, that was cool.
Brutal.
Yeah.
But I really think the doll is effective when they show the hazy mirror images and things of the life-size doll. That is just like bizarre. And I think that is really, really strong in this episode. You know, even though the execution ultimately was kind of strange, but I really love that.
Justo, what about you?
I think, like I said earlier, all the Mulder Scully phone call conversations, even when they're not literally together, the chemistry is still there. And when you think about the fact that I doubt they were actually talking to each other.
No, that's just so crazy.
Still feel yeah. it.
You can still feel the chemistry. It's just incredible. So
that is a good point.
That's my favorite part of the episode.
Yeah, same. All the phone calls. I love when she
the comedy.
When she keeps hanging up on him. Like, and I love when he calls and he's like, I thought you weren't answering your phone. And she's like, then why did you call? Like
Oh, and the part where he's like, well, have you looked into that mythology? And she goes on that whole monologue of all the different... And then he goes, Scully, marry me. And that's very funny.
God. It just brings a grin to your face. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, that's certainly... I think that's the fuel of this. But honestly, again, what we've been saying, like, that was a fuel for a lot of the shows, which is kind of why, you know, when they remove the, you know, piece of the equation... You know,
it did not work.
We had to do evolution.
I think that's like the miracle about season 8, though, is I think it did work.
Well, it does work in that respect.
But like,
yes,
I was just disappointed. I just missed him.
But I still
did. But my thing was, I knew that he didn't want to be there. So I'd rather have somebody wanted to be there than somebody didn't want to be there.
No, Doggett's an amazing replacement.
And I
will
I love
say
him.
It's one of those things where it's just you can't. But then they
it
replace
just reboots the show because the whole thing becomes about finding Mulder. Yeah. And that just adds a whole other element for her as opposed to just her not really tagging along, obviously, but her joining him on his quest to find his sister.
Yeah.
And now it's more about her trying to find Mulder,
I always
who Doggett has got
show.
No connection with.
But
you know
also
what I mean?
Gives her a totally new outlook. She's not the skeptic anymore.
Yeah.
So it gives her a whole new range.
It's a great subversion.
Yeah.
And you, because you don't want her to leave, you're all about it. You're like, oh, wow, she's now on the other side of this and is the new Mulder. And that's the only place, that's the only person that could replace Mulder if you had to replace him is Scully.
You know what they did? They kind of did a Twin Peaks season 2 mishap in which they solved the Mulder case way too fast. And because season 8 is so good when they have those scenes, and you could have had him on the peripheral and David Duchovny would have been far more willing to come back and stuff like on random things
small,
here and there.
Yeah.
And if you kept the dynamic with Gillian Anderson and Robert Patrick, it really would have worked. It's when they replaced her and put like Scully in the morgue occasionally and then, you know, at home. It was just like, what with Monica
Reyes?
Reyes
issue. That's a whole other episode.
I was like, I love how none of this is in Jenga.
This is nothing.
I know. That sounds about right.
Again,
yeah.
You know?
All right. Well, good point. Well, what gave us a nightmare here? What was the biggest gripe that you had, Sammy?
I guess just how all over the place the episode was. Yeah. It just wasn't. I don't know. It didn't, like, the case itself is like a doll. Like, we've just seen this. It didn't feel original for me. Mm-hmm. And then it just, it was like we said earlier, the fact that, like, we're getting premonitions, we're getting, you know, people killing themselves. There's a doll, there's romance, there's like all this weird shit that doesn't really add up to anything. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, when they go meet the older woman who runs the daycare, the wee little laddies and lassies daycare. It just like nothing amounts to anything. Like, why did they kill her? Like, what did she do? You know, it just, I don't know. The doll doesn't really like, I don't, what is the doll's, what's it trying to
it's
do?
It's just evil.
Yes.
Was that the teacher that she got physical with, or really the doll probably did?
Yes.
Remember the story? That's the same teacher, right?
Yes, I think so.
Okay.
But still,
it hurt.
I don't know. I just
you
didn't
get the
really
feeling like the doll's trying to protect the child and people that have hurt the child, but then they throw that out the window.
The doll just wants to play.
Yeah,
exactly. So it's like, okay.
What does it get
from
the microwave to the water?
Like, I don't need, I want to make a point too. Like, I don't need everything to be explained.
No.
I talk about this all the time. I don't usually like that. But when you've got so many different things happening, I do need something to tie together somehow. Some explanation of how this ties together as opposed to just, like Sammy said, the mom has premonitions. Is that connected to this possessed doll?
Yeah.
Like, I don't, like that's like two different episodes.
That's why the simplicity is key. Like when, and that's why some of the earlier 70s and 80s King is great, because it's just, you have the hook and that's it. You don't need anything else. And when you add more variables, it's like, what's the equation here?
It's almost like King sat down, outlined a short story with all these elements and then worked them into the one episode when it's like, no, you should have just taken the core of that and then done that and not, because if you stretch this out, you could go into, well, she did have this background where people thought she was a witch because of X, Y, Z. So, and then you had all these red herrings that would work in a longer story because you keep second guessing like, well, maybe it's this person. But you only have, 45 minutes to tell the story or whatever. So,
yeah
I think it is a little all over the place.
Justin, any other gripes?
No, I think I expressed my dislikes
well,
pretty well.
I think we're all in sync. You know, we're all in together, which is a reference to a 2000 song by Limp Bizkit.
One of the great bands.
One of the great bands.
Yes.
2 years later, oof, what a great time for pop culture at that point. Mm. But sure. That scares me. That scares me going back to that year of 2000. It's a scary feeling. And I would say it's a type of feeling I would have if I'm walking through the cemetery.
What's the bottom of the truth?
Well, sometimes that is better. The person you put up there ain't the person that comes back. It may look like that person, but it ain't that person. Because whatever lives in the ground beyond the pet cemetery ain't human at all.
It's as simple as this. What do we think is
scary?
What are some scary moments in this?
I think there are a few. All the out of focus stuff with the doll.
Mm-hmm.
Or not the doll, but I guess like the doll's spirit.
Yeah, like the reflection in the freezer. Like, yeah, I thought that was creepy.
Just a couple things. Just the shadow on the sheet hanging outside.
Mm-hmm.
The butcher shop through the plastic drapes.
Yeah,
All that was done. And it was Kim Manners. I mean, he's like you said. There's a reason why he directed a fourth of the episodes. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was all very effective. And but again, like, is that the doll's spirit? Is it really standing?
Don't know.
No.
Again, like,
no.
I don't know. Don't what's know.
I don't think he knew. I don't think anyone knew.
I don't think
he knew
either. But anyway, you know, face value though, those are creepy scenes. I like the fact, once again, I always like my horror out of focus slightly.
Yeah. But you know what's creepy about that out of focus is, like, if you look closely, like, it almost looks like Tina's moving too in it. Yeah. Which
I love
is
how
really
you're calling it
eerie.
Tina.
Or not
Tina.
Tina. I mean,
it's
Chinga.
It's Chinga.
It's Chinga. But Tina, you know. Mac, what scared you?
The really unnerving opening sequence with the grocery store, I think, is really good. Like, it's just so out of control. And just crazy. I also think something that I didn't want it to work, and I'm kind of over at this point of like the children's music playing.
Oh, me too.
Scary trope.
Yeah.
But I gotta say, when they, even though they didn't need it, when they went back to the boat at the very end and the doll comes out and Mark Snow has that little minor key play on the Hokey Pokey,
mm-hmm.
it gave me chills. And I was like, damn it. Like, I was like, this, even though it's not like a super, super, super scary, memorable episode, I still felt like they know what they're doing. They know how to key in sometimes to these things and how to shoot them, and that's credit to Manners, obviously,
especially
as
Snow.
Well, but
God, Snow's
and
so
Snow
good.
Yeah, I mean, like, so good. Yeah.
This is a plea to release his score on vinyl, finally, like all of them.
That'd be such a
they
huge,
don't already yeah. have
well
that?
they have it on CD.
It's all the CDs. Yeah.
Did you, Mac, you bought one of those CDs too, right?
I've got, like, the first set, which I really love. I would love to get the second. You have the second, don't you?
Yeah. And like, they, but they're not streaming anywhere, and it's like, and
you'll probably
have a CD player.
I guarantee you'll hear rumblings next year for the 30th anniversary in
that's
2 years.
Crazy.
So.
Yeah, that's crazy to think. Yeah, we're old. Sammy, what's your
deal? You know what'd be crazy is that when that show comes, when 30th anniversary hits, there'll be people who weren't even born who will have grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like that.
Yeah.
Like,
you always love doing this. Like,
It's crazy to think about the years, though. That's how I always think about that.
Well, yeah. When I at CVS, I got carded, and like the woman was like, "All I have to see is the 19," and I was like, "Don't like that."
Yeah,
don't like that.
That's wild. Yeah.
Yeah, crazy times, but
scary stuff.
Aside from our years. Existential,
aside from like, you know, just existing. I thought there's like a scene where the mom is in the kitchen and she looks in the window and like the cop that's pining after her, she sees another, I think, a premonition of his face like all bloody in the window. That like kind of, I guess, was a little spooky, but. And like, I think the grocery store scene is too, but like when she sees him in the frozen.
Freezer.
Like the frozen food section, it looks like one of those like things you get from Spirit Halloween.
It does.
Where you like, it's the face and you like post it in the window and it's like, help me.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't look like it. It kind of looked goofy to me, but I get what they were going for. And then obviously all the eye stuff, like I said, it very much reminded me of Argento thing. Like, I kept thinking about Opera with like their eyes, like all kind of like scratched out with like the needles and stuff. But that's about it. It really didn't leave me scared.
I got kind of scared when Mulder looks up and the pencil falls and you could have hit.
I got scared
about
his
eye.
Cover your eyes. Cover your eyes.
I was scared for his stomach when he drank the expired juice in his fridge.
Well, that scared me also, especially October 97. Oh my God.
I thought that the hook through her husband's head looked really good.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the type of graphic stuff I was talking
about.
That was
jarring.
I was surprised that was on Fox in 1998.
It made me think, like, I know you did Last Summer Killer, it made me think of that, but like, it made me realize, out of all the slashers, man, I really kind of underrate the fisherman in terms of his kills. Like, that would hurt. Like,
yeah,
you're in
the through the neck, the jugular.
It's also, you're icy, and it's like, you're fucking cold already. Not a good time. That
it's
gives me
cold.
Some chills.
It's the cold that's scary.
It gets some cold. But look, I gotta get warm. I gotta get warm. I gotta nuke up.
I gotta jerk off.
One of my favorite treats. I gotta jerk off. I gotta nuke off. In a section that
Jesus
we call
Christ.
Pound cake.
After all you've been taught,
everyone in Bad Mama, everything in the sin.
Come to your closet and pray. Ask to be forgiven.
He's a nice boy, Mom. You like him. You really like him, Mama.
Well, it's going. Yeah.
Oh no. Are you kidding me? I've said
going
worse
the pound
shit
cake.
Than
that's
that,
why
Justin.
I made the jerk off joke, right?
We had to.
I have said
fine.
Way worse things than that.
Look, this is a Patreon exclusive episode. We can go a little while.
That's right.
We can
whoa,
go,
things
these are NC-17.
Yeah, these are NC-17 XXX.
I think there have been allusions at this point to Mulder and porn, you know? But mm-hmm. the fact that he's blatantly watching it in the office is very funny to me. And then trying to say, oh, it's the world's deadliest swarms.
And that he's watching,
which was a takeoff,
porn.
By the way, on what Fox was doing a lot at the time.
That's
they
true.
Were like, the world's deadliest this, the world's deadliest that. So that was also a bit of parody. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I feel like every show on Fox made fun of Fox with
it still
just
does.
Glee.
Alien abductions thing. You know?
God, I remember the deadliest swarms. Holy shit, that is crazy.
Is it swarms of bugs?
It was
like
just you would have. They had episodes about like swarms of bees and stuff too.
And maybe like birds.
Yeah, it was whatever would get the because Fox had football. So it would always be like right afterwards, like, oh, hey, stick around for this crazy fucking
thing. Oh, you just watched some football?
Watch.
You want to watch some swarms?
Yeah, like the Simpsons are the best at making fun of Fox. Like,
and
they,
Family
they,
Guy did it too, obviously.
Yeah, but Simpsons were really the first ones to really kind of like put it to the jugular with them. And it was great. Like, and Fox were always good, you know, they had a great sense of humor.
Good sports.
Fortunately, it didn't carry over to the news department. But
that's
anyway,
a whole different thing.
That's a whole other thing.
That's a whole other thing.
So look, we don't, I mean, other than the blatant porn here and the fact that we get some bath shots, which.
Well, vavoom.
Male gaze? Is that a problem here? Or?
I'll give you some female gaze right here. Are you kidding me? I can't like oof. I'm the world. Like my whole entire Twitter feed is just like all Gillian Anderson because it's like we know you like this, you know.
Yeah.
And so
look,
I'm like,
we got
you're
Mulder
not wrong.
And we got Mulder and Speedos a couple seasons earlier.
It's
we
true.
Get
which
Gillian
was great
Anderson
too.
Bathtub, you know?
Like I, man, God.
So
she's
I,
great.
I have
she's,
a
even
she's
as Margaret
vacation,
Thatcher,
so
I was
she's,
like,
she's
ooh.
Taking a relaxing bath. It works in the episode because she's on vacation.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like she's got like rose petals set up or something
too.
Like that. You know, she's taking a bath. But
herself,
I appreciated it very much. I appreciate it.
Is this all right? So since we don't really have much here, what would you say is your favorite X-Files pound cake moment?
Fuck. Well, obviously when they kiss and fight the future.
That's kind of a tease, though. It's not. Really
but it's still
cake.
Great. It's the tension there.
Yeah,
you know?
She gets stung by a bee, so it doesn't really work. You know.
I think it's
I know,
the,
but still, it's the tension. It's the buildup. We've been waiting for it. You
Millennium
know?
Episode. Mm. New Year's.
Is that when they're sleeping?
Yeah.
That's
the New Year's episode. And she's just watching, and he kind of looks at her. And then the clock strikes midnight, and he leans over and kisses her and says, Happy New Year, Scully.
That's a great moment.
I mean, even in the pilot, but when she lifts her shirt in the hotel room,
you just want them
to just fuck, you know?
That pretty much tipped off. The whole
yes, it was not a platonic, and like that would always get me so mad when Chris Carter would be like, "It's a platonic relationship," and it's like
no,
it never was. It never from the get go you could feel it.
Yep,
I think behind the scenes probably too, right?
I would hope so.
Well, but then they also hated each other too, and like you can that worked to their advantage.
Yeah. Yeah, Shiloh's getting a little restless here. He just got off the couch
loud,
and he's just
he
like, "You guys
like
talking
it.
About
he
some?"
Just and got off the couch.
You guys talking about pound
like,
cake?
What
again?
The
fuck? Talking about Gillian Anderson and pound cake? And David Duchovny. What about you, Mac? What's a good pound cake moment
well,
for you?
Pound cake for me is stuff that doesn't work that sexually.
That's like sexual, so sexy moments.
I couldn't say. I mean, I really couldn't. I'm trying to think of things that like were silly or didn't. I guess you could point to bad blood, right? Like the of the. I love that.
Oh,
stuff.
She's looking
Luke
at Luke
Wilson
like a honk, and he's looking
like,
at it with Buck
she's like so into Luke Wilson. It's so funny.
Yeah, yeah.
And his point of view, he's got like these giant teeth and stuff like that.
Yeah,
I will say the pure pound cake moment of the entire show is the Red Shoe Diaries episode with David Duchovny going to L.A. and messing around with vampires the entire time. Like that is that to
oh,
me
you know
is
that
just
is.
Smutty pound cake. Is that his
the
girlfriend
actor.
At the time, or
it's what's her name from Artie's wife on Entourage.
Oh, really? It is her. Yeah.
Harry Reeves.
That's true.
Harry Reeves.
Oh, yeah. She's a babe.
They were dating, yeah. they were dating at the time.
Oh, and she was in Child's Play 3.
Child's Play 3.
Was dipping in all of Hollywood at that point then. Like,
he's my king.
Like,
you know?
Look, yeah. he is one of the...
He's Hank Moody.
He's one of the most attractive men in the world.
Yeah. Well, because it's him. Yeah, I mean...
All right, look.
I get it.
We're getting a little too fucking...
Older episode again.
Sorry, God,
we're getting a little too sweaty here, all right?
I know.
All right, yeah. And it's a good thing we're getting sweaty because we're getting to get a little hotter. Because we're heading to Midworld. We're heading to King's Dominion.
There's another world out there.
I know there is.
Love some King's D.
Well, it's set in Maine.
Yeah.
So
I got something here.
I
you
got
some stuff?
Too. All right. Yeah, all right. I got
so you do, because I have something that's not really related to King.
The very first thing we see in this episode is a Maine license plate.
Okay, so I wrote that down too, but what did you get out of it?
So you look at the numbers. You can jigger this around where it makes sense. So the numbers that we get are 384. The letter M is in Mary.
Mm-hmm.
And then, or is in Mulder. And then 9 and 5. If we treat the M as minus and we kind of rejigger things, 3 + 8 + 4 + 9 - 5 = 19.
That was the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. I can't.
Best. That is the
there
best.
There we go.
Thing.
Room 237 for Mac. There
that
you
is
go.
Some room 237. Yeah.
19.
Oof.
How about that?
That was great. Sammy,
I mean,
what do you got?
Obviously, like, so I didn't have any, you know, as great as that. But like the grocery store kind of looks like the grocery store from The Mist. Yeah. I felt like he loves a good grocery store.
It's a big deal. They shot an actual grocery store, which I guess was the first
location based. Yeah.
So
they actually said I read some trivia that people were just walking up to the grocery store as if it was a grocery store while they were filming that. And people were walking out with bloody eyes, and they actually like got freaked out.
I would be freaked out. Yeah. I'd be like, I'm not getting some turkey meat here.
Not turkey meat. Yeah. Who doesn't love a good turkey meat?
Okay.
I'm not into the turkey, but.
Then the white sheets, when like she appears on the white sheet, the Chinga, it reminded me of like Pennywise on the white sheets.
Yeah.
And then I obviously the ayahs just thrown in there for like, guys, don't forget
definitely.
We're in Maine.
Did they say the right?
It's not great. It's not a great, like you can tell he's trying hard. And then the older woman who runs the daycare, like she's that like kind of religious crone. Like I feel like he puts that in a lot of, his, writings.
Like Mrs. Carmody from The Mist.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Or, you know, Bev from Midnight Mass.
Because that's essentially a Stephen King word.
Ooh. Yeah,
Margaret White as well. You know, same thing.
Yes,
same
exactly. Yeah. Like he loves a good religious bitch.
Yeah,
exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mac, did you find any other ones?
I mean, other than the fact that it was Maine, I didn't have any King stuff. But I did want to point out that the classical piece of music that Scully's listening to is Concerto Number 3 in B minor by Hummel, and there's the Hummel figurines.
Okay.
Then I thought that was kind of had to be on purpose.
What's a Hummel figurine?
Yeah.
They're like those kinds of dolls. Like, well, not dolls, but smaller versions with the way that the faces look and stuff are very
honestly,
much like that.
Sure. I think you're right on that, because like I feel like this is the type of show that would do that.
Well, also talking dolls remind me of the Tommyknockers.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
So there you go.
Maybe this one's from there.
Oh.
A remnant.
Maybe the knockers
the
are behind.
Same universe.
Maybe the Tommyknockers are actually behind Chinga.
Yeah. Well, there's a really cool scene where Leland Gaunt's walking in the background, too.
Oh, I love that.
Just like, oh, Scully.
I saw Randall Flagg, too.
Yeah, you know.
Oh, I hope you enjoy that doll from my shop.
Yeah.
Hope your bath's warm. Hope your bath's warm. Dana, hope your bath's warm.
He's just like a creep. Like
he is a creep.
He is actually a creep in Needful Things. He
there's a character named Dana in The Stand, so he could just easily
put
the dialogue in there.
Yeah,
well, to be
sure,
fair, the girl is named Polly. Polly is Alan Pangborn's girlfriend in
Needful Things.
Yeah. So how about that?
Stretch, man. I was trying to read the numbers on the phone in her hotel room, too.
Yeah, you were pausing on that one.
Yeah, because I just was looking for anything.
Well,
yeah.
I think I got the numbers thing down pretty good, though.
You definitely
did. You got that down.
I do think it's also interesting that she was eating pizza and cantaloupe in her hotel room.
That's a weird mix.
That is a weird mix. But she eats weird. Like she doesn't, you know, because remember there's that episode, I think it's Bad Blood, where she's like, I haven't eaten all day and I've only had a bagel with cream cheese. Like
she's like hangry.
She gets hangry. Yeah.
Yeah. Which to be fair, we don't ever really see Mulder eat unless he's just having his, sunflower seeds.
He loves those.
Which I'm not a big fan of sunflower seeds. They're hard to open. I don't really get how you do it.
Wait, what are you talking about?
I think they're hard to open.
You crack them with your teeth.
No, but you have to like. Don't you have to like eat around the sunflower
no,
and then you spit it out?
On them and spit them
you
out.
Suck on it. You crack it and then you spit it out.
But there's
you
a thing inside
that, you
the
can
sunflower.
Eat that whole thing.
No,
it's
I just throw my mouth. I suck on them for a while. I spit them out. I don't open anything up. This is
Wait,
pistachio
really?
Nuts.
This conversation could be taken All right. so differently.
I used to just eat the whole seed. You can eat the whole thing.
I don't eat
oh,
it.
Oh, wow.
No, Mac, I do not eat the whole seed. What the fuck?
No one knows how to eat this. This is literally proving my point that no one knows how to eat sunflower seeds because
I'm telling you,
my
way is the only way. You just put it in your mouth, you suck on it for a while, you spit it out.
I've never heard of a food where you just suck on something
and
throw it out.
It's like you could do baseball, like in the dugout, we would just sit there and just suck on sunflower seeds and spit them out.
You know, like dip, like tobacco, you know, chewing tobacco, you just suck on it and spit it out.
Listen,
I think
you
this
don't
is the,
swallow,
we've said
you just
suck
spit.
15 times,
oh,
yes.
Okay, we're not even in pound cake
we've
anymore.
We've back into pound cake.
We're back in pound cake.
Look, we're going to slide forward into our final
slide,
thoughts.
Slide, huh?
Love.
Dad, can we go now?
You ready?
Yeah, we've been ready for an hour.
Okay, I'll be right there.
Said that a half hour ago. Yeah, my dad's weird. He gets like that when he's writing.
Oh, wait, we're going to our overall thoughts.
Google
I think else? I stepped over your line. Hey, everybody, yeah. We're going to go to our overall thoughts for the episode.
There we go.
Hey, guys, let's go to overall thoughts for the episode.
All right, we all in sync now?
Overall thoughts.
All right, Mac, take it away.
I'm going to give this 3 chingos out of 5. I think
you liked it more than I did.
It's you know, it's got some classic memorable stuff in it. It's serviceable, it's fine. I think it's got a couple of gruesome a few gruesome deaths, although it doesn't all quite tie together as well as I'd like it to. I watching it again, I found it to be pretty entertaining. I was never bored in this episode. Yeah, and you get that great Scully Mulder, you know, relationship stuff going on there.
Yeah,
on the phone.
That's
I mean,
pretty much
like,
the only
I,
thing
I,
to praise.
I, like, that's my takeaway. But yeah, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot, and I think it gets those. I think it earns those chingas.
Chingas, I love this. What if we just replaced the Pennywise clown nose
chingas.
After 5 years with chingas for no reason? Sammy,
word. I would give it like 2.5 chingas out of 5.
So a half a doll, like maybe
some
of the body
parts.
Yeah,
like a doll with all like, right. You know, like a little arm, kind of like that the sketch from that Kristen Wiig in SNL when she has like the little hand.
Oh yeah. Or like one of like
the whole song.
Yeah. Oh. The whole song, yeah.
Yeah.
Just like that.
You don't talk about
the song from that she does with on the piano or
no,
I don't know.
Doll parts.
Oh, yes, the whole,
the album. As in,
I thought you were saying the whole song.
No.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. The great song, Courtney
my
Love,
song.
Am I right?
One of my favorite Kurt Cobain songs.
Oh, God, all right.
Yeah, I know. I don't love this episode. But I love, obviously, I've said it fucking 15 times. The Mulder Scully shit is the best part. I've watched it a couple of times. Like, I never skip it when I'm watching, like rewatching. But I like, it's a background watch episode. Yeah. Like, I could be doing the dishes or like, you know, cleaning up I don't know.
What if you're cleaning a butcher knife though when you're doing
blowing your eyes out?
I was cleaning up a big like hook. Kill you with.
Okay.
But but yeah, it's not a great episode, but it's not the worst episode either. So I like grand scheme of things.
Goldilocksing it.
Yeah, it's you know it's like I mean it's better than like some of the new stuff.
Yeah, it's better than the episode that follows, which is
yes, oh way
yeah,
better.
True
yeah.
That,
and God. I still watch that episode. You know, just as I you watch it for them, and so the story sometimes doesn't matter to me. Yeah. And because they're so great, like their rapport is so wonderful in it, like it's worth watching. But other than that.
All right.
I've seen better.
Well, first person shooter's pretty awful too though. They're in
yeah, that one's pretty bad. That's what, season 9 or season 7?
Seven maybe?
Yeah, 7. Anyway.
Spiritual sequel is Kill Switch, yeah.
Oh Lord.
I'd rather
Justo.
Kill Switch Ignition over here.
What's your Kill Switch Chinga?
I'm gonna give this a 2.5 chingas as well. I think there's far, far better episodes. I think there's far, far worse episodes, even in the initial run, not just the season 10 and 11.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think all the creepy stuff is actually pretty creepy. Like I said, all the out of focus doll stuff works for me. All the Mulder and Scully interplay in this episode specifically is a lot of fun. It's just, I think that another big thing that's a knock against it is just that when I remember it being promoted as like Stephen King is doing an episode of The X-Files. So your expectations are kind of higher. You think it's going to be a special episode. And at the end of the day, it's just not a special episode. So yeah, 2.5 chingos out of 5.
Well, I'm going to give two chingas for two of FBI's finest, Mulder and Scully. Look, I used to be in the music industry. Did you know that? You know that? Well,
yeah,
one of the things
we used to talk about how Kurt Cobain wrote a bunch of Hole songs.
Yeah,
and then Billy Corgan came in also.
Yes, that's right.
Well, one of the things that's actually a good seg, because one of the things that always made me wary in the music industry were star-studded collaborations, because sometimes they work, and like Michael Jackson's really good at making those, or was really good at making those A-list collaborations work, but most of the time they kind of fumble right out of the gate. I mean, I'm thinking about like all those Super Bowl halftime shows in the aughts, like the Britney Spears and Aerosmith, Janet Jackson, Justin Timberlake, just didn't work really well. And so for me, it's like, I don't know. Like,
so says you. It did work well for some people.
Well, for the king, I don't know. I would say the Britney Spears and Aerosmith halftime show sucked. But anyway, for all his strengths over horror, I just don't really feel like King fits into the X-Files. I just don't. I just think it's a different kind of fabric. It's almost like bringing him into this show is almost like stitching wool into silk. It's just, it's a little, it just doesn't work. It just doesn't work. And, at least especially in 1998, when we discussed with where he was in writing, maybe it would have worked a little bit better if he was in the mindset of the 70s. I don't know. I think the convoluted plot speaks a lot to like where King was with this, the story. But it could also have been a hack job. Who knows? Either way, two chingas. That's it. And I just got a buzz. It's my beeper. Skinner, he needs us upstairs. So look, pack your things, toss your pencils up towards the ceiling, and make sure you don't trip over Mulder's stack of pornos. In closing, I will leave you with this, though. There is a truth, my friend. It's that all you seek, there's no justice or judgment without which truth is a vast, dead hollow. Go back. Do not look into the abyss, or let the abyss look into you. Awaken the sleep of reason and fight the monsters within and without over long days.
And
pleasant
nights.
I got some hot friends. God, I got some hot friends. I got some hot friends. God, I got some hot friends. But you know you want some.
This is the end of our show, for now. We hope you enjoyed this production. If you like our programming, consider searching for other bloody disgusting podcasts, such as Creepy, Horror Queers, The Boo Crew, SCP Archives, Nightlight, Margaret's Garden, and more.